ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, Angus Taylor wins the Liberal Party leadership and nominates immigration and cost of living as two of his policy priorities. Also, Susan Lee's departure from politics sets up a by-election in her New South Wales seat of Farah. And the Bangladesh Nationalist Party wins the nation's first election since the deadly student-led uprising of 2024.
I'm feeling so good, so relaxed. All I can say, God bless Bangladesh.
Everyone is really happy and excited, like me as well.
After 13 years as a federal MP, New South Welshman Angus Taylor today won the position of leader of the Federal Liberal Party in a party room ballot, defeating Susan Lee 34 votes to 17. Victorian Senator Jane Hume was elected deputy leader. Ms. Lee defeated Mr. Taylor in a ballot for the leadership last year after the disastrous election result for the Liberals. She became the first woman to lead the parliamentary Liberal Party. She was in the job though for just 9 months and has announced she'll soon resign from Parliament, prompting a by-election in her New South Wales seat of Farah. As he takes charge of the fractured Liberal Party, Angus Taylor is vowing to chart a new course. Rachel Mealy prepared this report.
Well, good afternoon all. It is the greatest honour of my life to be elected as the leader of the Liberal Party.
Taking his position on the podium in front of six Australian flags and alongside newly crowned Deputy Jane Hume, Angus Taylor didn't take long to lay out the challenge the party faces.
It is clear we are running out of time. I won't mince words. The Liberal Party is in the worst position that it has been since it was founded in 1944. I don't shy away from this, and I know that many of our supporters are angry.
He says the party will move away from the path it's currently on and return to what he calls its core values.
It's on us to regain that trust and earn it, but the choice is simple for the Liberal Party: change or die, and I choose change.
Angus Taylor's campaign for the Liberal Party leadership has been simmering for some time. It's destabilised Susan Lee's role and created messy distractions for the party at inopportune moments. Today, he offered Susan Lee his thanks.
She took on an incredibly difficult task after a humbling election defeat back in May last year. Her work ethic has been absolutely relentless, and her commitment to the Liberal Party and this nation has extended over a long period of time as a minister in four governments and, of course, as opposition leader over the last 8 months.
Angus Taylor says home ownership and immigration will be a key focus of the party under his reign.
We'll stand for an immigration policy that puts the interests of Australians first and puts Australian values at the centre of that policy. If someone doesn't subscribe to our core beliefs, the door must be shut. If someone was to import the hatred and violence of another place to Australia, the door must be shut.
On the economy, he says the Liberal Party must be the party of lower taxes and acknowledge the error the party made at the last election where it opposed an income tax cut.
I think that was a mistake. I made that point some time back.
Opinion polls indicate the Liberal Party is hemorrhaging voters to One Nation. A recent news poll showed support for the coalition has slipped to 18% of the primary vote.
Well, can I say to those who have been thinking about shifting away from the Liberal Party to One Nation or any other party, we understand that you're disappointed with us. We understand that we need to do better to restore your confidence in us.
One Nation leader Pauline Hanson seemed unfazed by today's news.
They've changed the leader, but they're still on a dead horse. And what I hear all the time from Susan Lee, and as I'm hearing from Angus Taylor, is motherhood statements. The people have had enough. They are hurting. And they want strong leadership. They want to know where the politicians, the political parties, stand on their policies. What are you going to do for us?
National Party leader David Littleproud congratulated Angus Taylor on his selection. And when it comes to congratulations, the new leader of the Liberal Party made light of the mistake he made during the 2019 election, where he congratulated himself on social media for creating new car parks in his electorate.
If people want to congratulate me, as they seem to like doing, I'm delighted by that.
The new leader of the Federal Liberal Party, Angus Taylor, Rachel Mealy reporting. As I mentioned earlier, after losing the Liberal leadership vote, Susan Lee has announced she'll retire from politics after 25 years in federal parliament. Her resignation will trigger a by-election in her seat of Farrer, which takes in a large part of rural New South Wales, running along the state's borders with Victoria and South Australia. Kimberly Price filed this report.
It is important that the new leader gets clear air, something that is not always afforded to leaders.
Calling time on her parliamentary career, Susan Lee was graceful in defeat after lasting less than a year as Liberal Party leader.
When I came to the leadership of the Liberal Party 9 months ago, my mother had just died. One of the things she said was, when something ends in sadness, don't dwell on the disappointment. Be grateful that you had it at all.
Susan Lee won the seat of Farrer in 2001, following the retirement of National member and former Deputy Prime Minister Tim Fischer.
I won the seat by 206 votes, and I have been re-elected 9 times. I love the Western Plains of New South Wales, the Murray and Murrumbidgee Rivers, and the rural communities that it has been my enormous privilege to represent.
The residents of Farrer's two largest regional cities, Griffith and Albury, wished Susan Lee well.
I thought she was brilliant. She done what she had to do and she gave Griffith a name. It's disappointing that she's been voted out.
I think it's a sad day for women. I don't think she was given a very fair go.
It's a loss to this area. You know, it's the first female leader of the Liberal Party. Yeah, I don't really think very much of her replacement.
I think given it was the Liberal Party, it was probably inevitable that this was going to happen. They've seemed to not have very strong leadership for a long time, and I'm not surprised that they've decided to take this path away from Susan Lee.
I think it is time for change in the area, and I think a breath of fresh air in the electorate will highlight the things that we need at the moment.
Election analyst Anthony Green says a Farrer by-election will be a complicated contest.
Both the Liberals and Nationals will run. There'll be One Nation. And there's also an Independent who did well at the federal election. With One Nation polling well, the question is whether they will poll well enough to outpoll one of the two coalition parties. Now, you'd expect strong preference flows between the two coalition parties. What you don't know is whether there will be leakage of preferences between the Liberals and Nationals. And also by both running, it opens the opportunities for other parties to engage in strategic preferences to sow disharmony within the coalition.
In his first speech as Liberal leader, Angus Taylor announced his party would contest the by-election, as did One Nation leader Pauline Hanson.
We will be fighting for the rural issues that's important to the people in these communities. They feel very much forgotten. And I think the biggest issue with these communities, especially there, is about the Murray-Darling Basin, the water issue, the agricultural issue, the farming sector, the cost of electricity, cost of living, all affect these communities.
While the National Party are yet to confirm if they'll run a candidate, Liberal Party Vice President and former MP Fiona Scott told the ABC's national political lead, David Spears, she believes there's already movement on the ground.
My understanding is there have been call flutes up for a couple of weeks for a National Party candidate.
It's a bit presumptuous, isn't it?
Well, it also throws a different shade of light on the communications that Susan's been dealing with David Littleproud in the background if the Nats are campaigning in her seat and she's still the member and the leader of the party at the time.
No date has been announced for the Farrer by-election.
Kimberly Price. Karen Middleton is a journalist and columnist at The Monthly. She agrees Angus Taylor's biggest challenge is going to be attracting both those voters thinking of switching to One Nation and the city voters who've turned away from the Liberals at the last couple of elections.
He's got a party that's been splintering with voters heading in two different directions, and he's now going to have to try and unify the party behind him and then appeal more to that spread of what John Howard used to call a broad church of constituents. So they have already got a Herculean task ahead of them for the next election, and now they've changed leaders. So in a sense, they're starting again. That can have its own cost. You know, they had the first female leader of the Liberal Party. She's been removed after just 9-10 months in the job. That could have a cost with them, particularly among female voters. But just the churn and the change and what looks like chaos can be detrimental too. So they've got to try and unify, stabilise, make sense to voters and find some messaging and policies that appeal to the people who've been deserting them.
Yes, which policy platforms do you think could appeal to both sides, those tending One Nation and the more urban voters?
Well, I think it was pretty revealing today when Angus Taylor gave his news conference alongside his new deputy, Jane Hume, that the first thing he highlighted, other than our way of life and our standard of living, which were two broad things that encompass a range of policies, was housing. And that is something that traverses a lot of those areas where people are feeling stress. He talked about housing and he talked about immigration. And I think it was interesting the way he spoke about immigration, because immigration really is an economic issue. People are feeling economic pain, and that's when they often turn to immigration as a solution. But he went a bit further than that, and he did sound as though he was signalling to some of the people who may be pursuing Pauline Hanson's views on immigration, talking about concerns about Australia's core beliefs and people upholding them. So they were the two first things that he really highlighted. And I think on housing in particular, he needs to have some things to say. And we know there's a policy drafted on immigration. Whether they do any redrafting of that or they simply try to get it out quickly, I don't know. But they're clearly wanting to emphasise it.
Angus Taylor was criticised for the lack of strong economic policy he took to the last election as Shadow Treasurer. Malcolm Turnbull, the former Prime Minister, has described him today as the best qualified idiot. What's your assessment of Mr. Taylor's performance as an MP?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty unkind, to be honest. I think Angus Taylor has had his problems. He had some difficulties with communication, and there was some confused messaging in the last term of government. He did say today that he thought that, for example, the stance the Liberal Party took under Peter Dutton on tax policy, opposing the Labor government's tax cuts, was wrong and a mistake. He seemed to imply it wasn't his idea. So he's obviously trying to put some distance between himself and those old policies. But he and Jane Hume were the economic team in the last term of government, and she was also criticised for her work on the work from home policy that went down so badly and had to be abandoned mid-campaign, and she's also apologised for that. So, you know, they've got a bit of rebuilding of their own images and reputations to do. He's clearly not an idiot. He's a Rhodes Scholar, and he's, you know, somebody that people say is a very bright policy mind, but that's not all there is to leading in politics. He's now got what they call the hardest job in politics. That involves clear communication. It involves consultation with colleagues. And that's been really missing from the Liberal leadership in the last couple of terms of government, I think.
Susan Lee's relationship with the junior coalition partner, the Nationals, was disastrous. Do you expect Angus Taylor and David Littleproud will have a better relationship?
Well, I expect so. We know that Angus Taylor's already spoken to David Littleproud. He acknowledged that this afternoon. I think there'll be a lot of conversations. Where that's going to get really interesting in the short term is in the seat of Farah, where Susan Lee has now indicated immediately that she'll be resigning and leaving politics. That brings on a by-election, and that was traditionally a Nationals seat. She won it from the Nationals after Tim Fischer, who was the Nationals leader, retired from politics. That didn't go down well with the Nationals. It's been a point of some bitterness for some people for a long time. You would expect the Nationals would run a candidate in that seat, but that's going to put some pressure on the relationship instantaneously. So it'll be very fascinating to see how the two leaders sort that out.
What do you think might happen?
The traditional arrangement with the coalition parties is they don't run what we call a three-cornered contest. So Liberals and Nationals don't run against each other whenever there's an incumbent in the seat that has been pre-selected, whether that's a National or a Liberal. But when someone retires, it's open season. They can run a candidate. So it'll be a decision really for David Littleproud, whether he runs a Nationals candidate. I'm sure the Liberals will want to run a candidate because it's a Liberal-held seat and they won't want to be losing any more.
And of course, One Nation has confirmed that they will be running as candidate in Farrer.
Pauline Hanson's been out straight away again. If anyone needed reinforcing that immigration is a big issue, she's been out talking about immigration, saying that what the Liberals are saying is not good enough, what Angus Taylor has been saying is not good enough yet. As she's confirmed, she'll run a candidate in Farrer, and she did run a candidate against Susan Lee at the last election, I think, you know, got a reasonable percentage of the vote, but she's saying different jockey, same dead horse. So she's getting her own messages about the leadership change out there very quickly.
Karen Middleton is a journalist and columnist at The Monthly. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. Just a reminder, you can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, the 18th anniversary of the National Apology to the Stolen Generations marked in Canberra. To Bangladesh now, where the country's Nationalist Party has won the nation's first election since its authoritarian leader Sheikh Hasina was overthrown in 2024. The toppling of her regime was triggered by a mass uprising of students, and hundreds of people were killed in the unrest. ABC correspondent Alison Horne is in Bangladesh's capital city, Dhaka. Alison, tell us about the party and the leader who's won this election.
Well, the party is the Bangladesh Nationalist Party. This is a long-term legacy party, but it hasn't really been involved in politics here for some decades, given the rule of the former authoritarian leader, Sheikh Hasina. The leader of the BNP is a man called Tariq Rahman. He is wildly popular. I was inside a media throng yesterday as he was trying to cast his vote, and I quite literally got crushed. There were just so many media and people from the public trying to see him and just get a few moments in his presence. You really do get this feeling that he has galvanized this country for a new era, an era of what people here are saying is a reboot to democracy. Tariq Rahman has not been in Bangladesh for the last 17 years. He's been exiled, living abroad, and he does have strong roots in this country. Both his parents have had prime ministerial or presidential leadership positions. So he has a long history in politics here, but he is really being seen as this new force, someone that has offered to crack down on corruption and present a new option for politics. And I really do get the sense that people have been quite energised by his leadership.
Alison, I remember in 2024 when the authoritarian leader Sheikh Hasina was overthrown, the students played a huge role in her toppling and they formed a political party. How did that party go in this election?
Yeah, so it was a slight controversial move that this party, the NCP, actually formed an alliance with the main opposition party, Jamaat-e-Islami. Now, the Jamaat party also promised to crack down on corruption, but controversially for some groups here, Jamaat didn't run any female candidates. And so by the NCP kind of tying itself to Jamaat, there is some conversation here that it may have greatly affected the NCP vote. They have not had, up until this point, a wide showing, just a couple of seats. But Sam, I would say from those protests that we saw in 2024, when these thousands of people took to the streets and about 1,400 were killed under the direction of Sheikh Hasina and her corrupt government, and that led to her government being toppled and she fled to India, where she remains right now. From those actions, it has led to this point, a monumental election.
What have the celebrations been like there in Dhaka, Alison?
Well, on election day, it was really quite striking. I know in Australia, we don't really have this tradition of having a massive sort of celebration as such, but it was quite festive here. There were balloons and fairy lights and glittery streamers set up. People were passing around cakes and biscuits and coffees. There was this real energised mood among the people here because for several decades, they haven't been able to vote freely or fairly. Votes and elections for at least the last 17 years have been held under the threat of reprisal or vote rigging and corruption. So this is their first chance to have been able to vote freely in such a long time. And so many people were really emotional when talking about how important it was for them to be able to have a democracy that operated in such a free way. I would say there has been a mass military presence, more than a million military, army and paramilitary police on the streets to try to keep any peace if there was going to be any unrest. That hasn't come to pass at this point in time. And what we're seeing today is everything's incredibly calm.
ABC correspondent Alison Horne updating us on the Bangladesh election result from the nation's capital, Dhaka. Today marks the 18th anniversary of the national apology to the Stolen Generations, and more than 100 survivors have gathered for an annual breakfast in Canberra. Indigenous Affairs reporter Kirsty Wellauer has this report.
Uncle Sonny Mori clearly remembers the day he was stolen from his family in Alice Springs.
I was a 7-8-year-old kid playing with my cousin, and the welfare just pulled up and put me in a car and drove away.
He was placed in a children's home and never saw his mother again.
This one thing I still remember so clearly is the look on my cousin's face of sheer terror. I still got that, I can still see that like today, almost 80 years later down the road.
We today take this first step by acknowledging the past.
In 2008, then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd apologised to the thousands of Stolen Generation survivors for the pain, hurt and suffering caused by government policies that led to the removal of Aboriginal children.
To the mothers and the fathers, the brothers and the sisters, for the breaking up of families and communities, we say sorry.
It was a landmark moment in the nation's history. 18 years on, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says Australia must come to terms with its past.
Truth is essential because we can only truly know where we're going if we know where we've been. That is the great journey we can be on together. Saying sorry was never intended as the final word, but as the beginning of a bigger, brighter story. A story in which we keep working to close the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians until that gap belongs to history.
I think truth-telling is incredibly important, particularly for these old people, to feel that their stories were not in vain, they're not forgotten.
That's Healing Foundation CEO Shannon Dodson.
It's a really key opportunity for even Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities and those young people to hear about what their old people have gone through so they can better understand themselves and what it means for them in this world as well.
It comes as the federal government has today announced $87 million in support for Stolen Generation survivors, including family tracing, reunification, aged care and access to records and redress. But not all survivors will have access to redress, with Queensland the last remaining jurisdiction that hasn't implemented a scheme. LinkUp CEO and Stolen Generation survivor Pat Thompson.
This is not a marginal issue. More than 6,000 survivors are still living in Queensland, and the impacts of their removal continue to affect tens of thousands of individuals, families and communities.
Today, over 100 Stolen Generation survivors gathered in Canberra for the annual breakfast, marking the significant day. Next year, organisers say they want to see the apology anniversary move outside the halls of Parliament House and back into communities.
We'll have it in every state and territory across Australia, because every Australian should be able to do this.
And for Uncle Sonny Mori, there is more to be done.
A nation will only move forward when we're all united. And we won't be united unless we do something about it. And that comes back to the politicians. It comes back to them, because they're our leaders.
Stolen Generations survivor Uncle Sonny Morey, that report from Indigenous Affairs reporter Kirsty Wellauer. And that's PM for this week. PM's producer is John Stewart, technical production by Joram Toth and David Sargent. I'm Samantha Donovan. Just a reminder, the podcast of the program is on the ABC Listen app. And we'll be back on Monday evening. I hope you have a great weekend. Good night.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Susan Lee has lost the Liberal leadership. Angus Taylor now has the mammoth task of turning around some of the worst polling in the Liberal Party's history and stopping One Nation from stealing more of its voters. Today, Nikki Sava, political commentator and former advisor to Prime Minister John Howard, on the leadership spill and whether the coalition has any chance of returning to government. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.